Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my great pleasure to be joined tonight by Amy and Alex, who are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome.
Hey, this is Alex.
Hi.
Hi, Michael. It's Amy.
Hi, Amy. Alex, I had a question for you.
Yes?
How do we go about exposing the voices?
How do we go about exposing the voices?
Yes.
Any way we possibly can,
whether great.
Through word, deed, or action.
Great. Great. Tell me more.
Well, that's what we do here at the monastery, actually. We go about exposing the voices at all times. We're encouraged to do so, because the more we do that, the more we get them out of our heads, the more they become less believable. And that's what our goal is when we do spiritual practice. We try to get very clear that the voices are not us, that who we are is not the voices.
Yes. Yes. Great.
Yeah. Great. And so, you know, at retreats, we encourage people who are sitting in group to whenever they're getting told something, it's always appropriate to expose them.
Yeah, so if I'm sitting there in group, if the voice is talking to me about anything, it's always okay to raise my hands and share, allow the voices to share with the rest of the group what they've been telling me.
That's right, that's right. Reminds me of that Zen story, you know, of the woman who was in a monastery who had attracted several other monks, and one of the monks decided to write her a secret letter and asking for a little private rendezvous, and she stands up and says, "If you love me so much, kiss me now," or something like that, in the middle of an entire group.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're doing.
If
you have something very valuable to say, say it now, where there's everyone here in Sangha available to hear what you have to say.
Yes. Yes, I've heard that encouragement to share in group while there's the opportunity to share. And then when group is over, to encourage them not to speak to me because now's not the time to share.
That's right. Wait till the next group. That's right. Yeah. So, as you know, I enjoy exposing them in the form of cartoons, so that's one way I do it. And I'm sure there are lots of different ways available.
Great. Do you want to say a couple sentences about the cartoons for people who may not be familiar with them?
Well, just that there's a cartoon called The Voices that talks all about how to expose them and how to get clear about who they are versus who you are. And the latest thing is that there's a whole big thing on practice at the moment and all the things you can do to expose them. So I won't go into much more detail about that, but they're available on our website. You just type in The Voices in the search thing and they'll show up.
Yes, and you can sign up to receive one weekly in your email inbox, right?
Absolutely, yes. That is so true. Mm-hmm.
Great, great. Alex, anything else you'd like to share right now about the process of exposing them?
No, but I hear we have some good tips as well from Amy.
Great. Amy, give us some of those great tips.
Okay, well, I had an assignment here at the monastery for some time to share in group and report on what the voices were saying. And one of the things that I saw in that was how redundant it is. And as Sherry said to me one time, that the voices are a one-trick pony. And so it's helpful to recognize that I'm going to hear the same stuff over and over and over again, and when I expose that and share that, then it helps it to become less believable.
Yes, yes. And as you share that, it occurs to me what a kindness it was for the monastery to encourage you to share all of that, to share in group regularly about what the voices were telling you.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I was looking at about this was that when I'm in group and I'm participating in group and I hear someone else report on what the voices are saying, I always find that to be very helpful. And the voices would tell me that no one wants to hear what the voices in my head are saying. However, when I'm listening and hear other people sharing that experience, it's always very helpful.
Yeah. That's my experience as well, that when I listen to other people in group, that I can really relate to what's being shared. Sometimes, you know, in a more direct way, and other times it's not as much my experience, but when I open myself to that possibility, what I see is that, you know, to varying degrees, we all have the same stuff going on.
Yes, yes. And I also always appreciate the courage that it takes, because it in my experience, it takes courage to go up against the voices and to speak out anyway.
Yes, 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 a lot of courage. And I hear that courage in, from everybody who's involved in this practice and everybody who calls in. It's really, for me, a really inspiring thing to experience.
Yes.
And it was interesting when you were talking about being in group, and the image I have is the voices are talking to you basically nonstop. And
yes,
it's like saying, just listen to me. Just listen to me. We, you know, this is a conversation just for us. We don't need to share it with anybody else. We don't want to take up the group's time, but just let you and I talk about this.
Exactly. A little side conversation.
Yes. Yes. Unfortunately, we have a guideline about side conversations, don't we?
Yes. a very good guideline.
Yes, yes. Great. What are some of the other tips that you're using to expose the voices?
Well, let me see. Well, what's occurring to me is maybe not so much a tip in exposing the voices, but something along the same lines, which is my new assignment in group, which is to share about what I'm turning my attention to instead of the voices. And so that's something that I've been looking at lately. And some of the tools I've been using are focusing my attention on the breath. When I'm hearing conversations starting in, let me see, several things. One is just whatever. that's one I learned from Sherry.
I'm laughing. That's a response to the voices, correct?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Whenever I hear the voices start in, just whatever.
Yes.
And I've also been adding a phrase occasionally when I hear something come in. I add the phrase, says the voice in my head that hates me, and it helps me to disidentify and recognize the source of where that thought is coming from.
I see. So you say, that's the voice in my head that hates me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. Great. You know, I love what you shared about that assignment, because I've been noticing that in some of the practice opportunities that have been offered recently by the monastery, that theme of, okay, what are the voices telling me? That's the first part. And the second part is, okay, now what do I want to turn my attention to?
Exactly.
And to me, it's so helpful to have that part of turning the attention to. It reminds me of Sherry talking repeatedly about the ability to direct our attention being just fundamental to our well-being.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely been my experience.
Yes, yes. Very exciting. Alex, Amy, anything else you want to share with us about the voices?
Don't believe them.
Don't believe the voices. Great. Thank you both so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us, Michael.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
Hi.
Boy, that was some good information, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
That was an action-packed 10 minutes.
That was an action-packed 10 minutes. Yes,
mm-hmm.
It was.
Yeah, it really was. You know, what I was seeing as they were talking is, you know, in a way you could say that's all of practice right there.
Yes.
Just seeing what's real and what's unreal with the voices, and then just aligning ourselves with, you know, the nearest form of support that we can find.
Wow. So seeing what's real or unreal about the voices, and then aligning ourselves with the nearest support we can find.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan for success.
It really does. In a way, it's everything that we do. You know, whenever we talk in this forum, in some way we're saying, here's what conditioning is up to, and here's what I see instead. You know, and of course, at the monastery, it's handy to be at the monastery or to be on retreat occasionally because you've got some extra support for that. So you can say. Well, here's what the voices are saying, and in that, you're aligning yourself with the monastery. And
yeah.
So you're aligning yourself with all of the support and all of the teachings and all of the people who have practiced through time to end suffering. Outside of the monastery, same thing. You could say that you're aligning yourself with life. You're just aligning yourself with that intelligence that animates that is not interested in suffering, but it's interested in, you know, in well-being and happiness instead. But we have to find the willingness to do it. And I really, really responded when Amy made that point about courage, that it takes courage. It really, really, really does. Because just so much of the way that we believe we have to survive life is tied up in the voices. And the way that they maintain their hold on us is just to always stay in the background and never get exposed. It takes tremendous courage to take them from, you know, back here, I'm kind of waving my hand behind my head,
yeah,
you know, where I can't see them, and then put them out where I can see them and where everybody else can see them, and where it's just really obvious that that's not real and that's not true. That's just conditioning trying to cause me to suffer.
Yes. 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 Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming up to me as you share that is something I saw recently, and that is my experience of being in group hour after hour after hour after hour, and it just becomes really obvious that the same thing is going on with everybody.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Yeah. Yeah. And one of the great benefits, of course, of being in group settings like this is you get to witness regularly great acts of courage from people.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
I mean, God, it's amazing. I just that's one of my very favorite things about living here at the monastery, and I've been here, you know, pretty darn long time at this point, and have been a part of, you know, at this point, thousands of groups. And to see someone come here off the street, you know, generally when people come here to the monastery, they're in pretty rough shape. you know, they have tried everything else first and have thoroughly proved to themselves that the one option they have is to, you know, give up everything else that everyone thinks is what, you know, that they need to be happy, you know, which is all what we do when we come to live as a monk. You know, we give up, you know, freedom of movement. We give up, you know, money, basically, friends. We give up just the power to make choices in our lives, all that kind of stuff. You know, someone to make that kind of a radical choice, someone has to be thoroughly convinced that that's the only choice that they have. And so people kind of show up here in pretty rough shape, having gone through that process a lot of times. And then it's just the greatest privilege, I think, and one of the most beautiful things a person can witness is to watch somebody arriving in that state, and then it is gradual. You know, it takes a good while to work through all of the voices and to sort out, you know, and realize that they're just interested in suffering. That's all that's going on. But to watch a person gradually, you know, day by day, week by week, sort of group by group, walking through that process and going from someone who is, you know, a lot of times, this is how I was anyway, when I came to the monastery, crushed by the voices into this tiny little place of unhappiness, watching them become larger and larger and larger and expanding more and more and more and becoming more and more free. And, you know, you can see it in their bodies. You can see it in their faces. It's just, it really is an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing. Wonderful. Dave, I have a couple of announcements here.
Okay, great.
So there are a couple of events coming up in the Bay Area with Sherry. On September 11th at the Mountain View Zen Center, Sherry will be leading a workshop called Practice Being What We Want for the World. And then we have the annual Bridge Walk on October 2nd. I think it's the, is it the 10th annual? 9th or 10th annual?
Something like that.
Something like that, which is very fun. And also, I noticed today that the first Africa blog has appeared on the website.
Yes, and the second one is on the way,
wow.
I happen to know.
Wow, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. The ground is, the team there has hit the ground running. Unfortunately, the internet situation there is not running up to keep up with them. They're really challenged. The guest house where we usually stay when we're there, that's one of the reasons we stay there, actually, is they have, you can't really call it high-speed internet, but, you know, decent-speed internet normally, and now they're down to dial-up speed. So they're really handicapped trying to get us the information about what's going on over there. But they're managing, and it's coming through. So, yeah, keep. I just couldn't encourage people enough to keep their eyes peeled for the for those blogs coming out.
Yes, yes. They're always wonderful, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really true. And we'll probably be updating folks as we go along, as more information is coming in. You know, maybe, you know, perhaps next week we could think about doing a Good News update on Africa just to let people know what's going on.
Oh, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is the September 11th event in Mountain View. We're trying very hard to find a way that would work to have people be able to participate from afar via some kind of mechanism, whether the internet or the phone lines. And we've been having a heck of a time finding a solution that will work, but we're on it. And so hopefully over the next couple of weeks, we will have something that will work and be able to put it out to people to invite people in to be able to participate. No guarantees. But if we can, that's what we're aiming to do, so people can keep their eyes peeled for an announcement about that.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. And the last event I wanted to mention is that Sherry will be on the East Coast in October from the 17th to 20th in Connecticut at what I hear is a very beautiful location.
I've heard that, too. We've never been there before. It'll be a new thing for us. But it's supposed to be beautiful. I think it's going to be quite cush. We're not even doing the cooking. So this is going to be brand new. It's probably a letting go opportunity for us, too, but that's okay. That's what we're here to do. But, yeah, it's supposed to be very nice. We're really looking forward to it. We've been trying to figure out a way to have a regular presence in the Northeast for some time and just have not found a way. And suddenly we just have this little breakthrough around this one place. And they love the thought that we're coming. They said, you know, people like us and the needs we have are the reason they built that place. And I think they struggle to actually get folks who want what we want. And so they're quite excited, I think, to have a silent retreat there at their place. So, and we'll be the only folks there. So it should be good.
Oh, great. Great. Wonderful. And I saw that there's thousands of acres of hiking just right nearby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks to be excellent. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Great.
And then to underline, too, the Bridge Walk, you mentioned that, but, boy, is that an event not to miss. It doesn't matter where you live. Planes fly all the time to the west. So if you want to come out, it's really a fun day, and it's a great way to support the whole practice, but especially the work in Africa. And it's a great time to see you know, we often get to see many, many people who we love, and which is kind of the best part of the day. And so anybody who can make it, just if you can at all, come on out. We'd love to see you.
Great. Great. Wonderful. And we have many wonderful folks waiting to talk to us on the phone.
Okay, great.
Yay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Dave. This is Catherine.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling in essentially because I've made a commitment to call in regularly.
All right. You're one of the growing crowd who has made that commitment, I think.
Yeah. I've been really inspired by the people who started that. And I am aware that while I was on hold, waiting to talk to you. Conditioning was really trying to get me to hang up.
I bet.
By arguing that I don't really have a legitimate reason to call.
Now, would that be those voices we were just talking about?
That would be those voices we were talking about. We need
you,
to expose.
You just exposed them.
Yeah.
That is really good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm seeing a couple of things about that. First, it was real important to me to keep my commitment to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That really takes care of me.
It really does. Can I underline that real quick, Catherine?
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the most important pieces of information out there, is that keeping our commitments to ourselves is really the way to take care of ourselves. It's another way of saying it. It's a critical part of practice. It feels like mm-hmm. becoming a trustworthy parent, you might say, to ourselves in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Somebody I can rely on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's willing to show up for you? You know, and to put it in terms of voices,
yeah.
is willing to choose you over the voices.
Yeah.
You know, over conditioning and all of its survival strategies. You know, conditioning has all these needs. It needs stuff for it. The thing about the mentor, you know, which is the person who would make that kind of a commitment, is this is what I love about it. The mentor doesn't have any needs. You know, the mentor only needs to love the person that he or she is here on this life to be with, and that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning is all kinds of needs, and the biggest need is for that being who it's in relationship with to suffer. So it's a really, really different thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it just really takes care of me to keep my commitment. And also, I was seeing that conditioning telling me you have to have a legitimate reason to call, which is legitimate means I have a problem.
Right.
That there's a message in that, an old message from conditioning, that I'm not enough as I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have anything to offer. I don't have any reason to, I don't have an entree into
mm-hmm.
the group.
So this would be those voices again, yeah?
Yeah.
Those darn
yeah.
voices, they're everywhere.
Yep. Yeah, trying to get me to not participate
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
whatever way.
Mm-hmm.
In whatever way. And now when I do call in with something I'm looking at and maybe I would call a problem and needing guidance, what happens is afterwards I'm beaten up for, why can't you be one of those happy people who, you know, don't
mm-hmm.
who just come in to share, call in to share words of wisdom.
Mm. Don't you love
don't
that? Yeah, before you speak, it says you got to have a problem. After
right.
you speak, it's a problem that you had a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
there's just no way to win when we're in a relationship with those voices.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And,
you know, you could always say, you know what, I do have a problem. It's you. You are
yeah.
my problem. It's the voices. You know, really, that's good enough reason to call in. Just right there, don't you think? I've got voices. I better call in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, voices, conditioning will make, if I'm looking at something, I become aware of something, oh, I want to look at that. I want to look in that direction. Conditioning will create a problem with that.
Of course.
Any kind of introspection, any kind of, you know, looking at what's going on with me,
mm-hmm.
Bringing the presence to that, a problem is created, something
yep.
I have to solve. Or
and you know why it wants to do that, yeah? Why it wants to create a problem out of everything.
So I can suffer.
Exactly, yeah. And even more specifically, so you can be in relationship with it.
With it.
So if you
okay.
see something, I think that's what you said a minute ago, you're going along through life. If you're not in a relationship with the voices, you're in a very open state.
Mm-hmm.
You're open to life. You're open to insights dropping in. You're open to everything really that your awareness is involved in. And often there's a lot of information there, just a lot of information about what you need, how you can take care of yourself, what's skillful and what's unskillful, all kinds of stuff like that. And if you remain in that state, of course, conditioning is quickly out of business because That is a state of freedom from the voices. So it's got to take what it's something in your experience and cause that to be something you will look to it for guidance for. And the best way to do that by far is to make it a problem, you know, or there's something wrong with that or like that. It just throws that little bit in and suddenly it turns it into from something that is just insights that are dropping in from life, you know, sort of just to help you along and give you what you need to really be able to live well and live deeply and take care of yourself. It just throws in, well, gosh, there's something wrong with that, or that's a problem or something, so that it's basically like an attention-attracting little thing, like a mechanism or a scheme. And it says, look over here. I've got some information for you. And so you need to turn your attention to me and seek guidance from me instead of guidance from life, because I know what's right for you.
Right. So you now have this problem, and you should feel this way about it, and you
mm-hmm.
should listen to me as to how to fix it, and all kinds of
things. Yeah. You need to be separate from the intelligence that just animates what is, where all the information actually resides. You don't want to look there. You need to look to me.
Yeah.
Because I know what you need. And of course, it knows what it needs.
Right.
And it knows you intimately enough that it can, usually without a lot of practice, pretty convincingly steer your attention away from the moment and the intelligence that's there and capture it for itself, where it can manipulate you and cause you to feel bad and cause you to believe self-hate and all kinds of unhappy things like that.
Mm-hmm. 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 And make me not enough, or try to make me feel not enough. Yeah.
For sure. If that's your karma, that's where it's going to head. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if that's something that you were fundamentally taught to believe about yourself,
mm-hmm.
then that's something it's heavily relying on to keep you in relationship with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what we were talking about a little while ago with the, how much courage it takes to expose the voices. Because if you were to, for you to say, you know what, like you did a minute ago, the voices are having me believe that I'm not enough. That basically rejects the survival strategies that you were taught to use in order to get by in life and sort of to stay in relationship with conditioning. You're basically saying, you know what, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to survive this life by living smaller than I am, by settling for just a tiny portion of what is really mine, of the joy that's really mine here, and to just take a beating all the time for who I am. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to give myself over to life and have life guide me through this life instead. Boy, that takes a tremendous act of courage.
Mm-hmm. You know, what just came up was, I want to turn myself over to life, warts and all. I just want to show up, warts and all, and I want my warts to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
You know,
yeah.
To be perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so,
and of course they are, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Truly,
we
they
all
are.
We all seem to have them. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, just like, if you ever, like a dog or a cat, you know, typically, I mean, I'm not sure this is the case, but it seems to be. Typically, people don't look at a dog or a cat, or even more extreme, like a tree, and say, you know what, that tree really isn't the right tree. Or, you know, that dog, mm-hmm. that really isn't the right dog. We tend to just accept the dog or the tree or whatever it is pretty much unconditionally because we don't have anything going about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't say, well, you really could be a little bit darker shade, and that would make you a much better dog or like that.
Mm-hmm.
We just tend to
just
accept them as they are because we don't need them to be different in any way. You know, warts and all. As a matter of fact, especially with like a dog or a cat, a lot of times that which is kind of quirky or unusual about the dog or cat is what we end up loving the most.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, we think that mm-hmm. is going to be different with us, that these things that we look at as that conditioning tells us are our flaws or, you know, things that are wrong with us, that those things make us unlovable, but it's actually the opposite of the case.
And what I just saw in that was, I won't accept it in other people either, and that will keep me separate. It's
absolutely.
Like, I'm not enough, and neither is he or she.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he, yeah, and so I'm separate, and I'm totally separate, really.
Yep.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of practicing that separation
yeah.
in relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you too, Catherine. Yeah, thanks for exposing the voices. It's just like Amy said, it's always just so helpful for everybody.
Well, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do so. So thank you for the show,
yeah.
Michael, and everyone. Thank you.
Yeah, good night, Catherine.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the great privilege of being joined by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do. And we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have another caller.
Alrighty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jessica from Mill Valley.
Hey, Jessica.
Hi. Oh, man. So the voices have been telling me that I'm just too caught up in the story, and that's why I can't talk about it, because I'm going to sound too, just way too conditioned and not good enough somehow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we know how to take that kind of information, don't we?
Yeah.
Yep. Not much in that to pay attention to.
The story is I've actually been just on a personal retreat for a few weeks now, and I've been trying to, you know, use all of the different practice tools as support as much as possible, and some different events have, I guess, kind of at least seemed to sabotage it a little bit. Last week I tried to be on the call, and there were a number of technological issues that prevented that from happening. And then I was signed up for the at-home working meditation retreat on Saturday, and I was really looking forward to it. It was something that, I had a belief that it was going to, you know, kind of ground my second week of this retreat that I'm on, and you know, I had signed up for it months ago, and I was just really excited, after the first orientation and sitting, I accidentally dropped my phone in an outhouse.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's a new one. That's good.
And so I wasn't able to participate in the rest of the day. I tried to get in touch with the monastery, both on by phone and email, you know, to let you guys know, because I was supposed to have a personal guidance call and everything. And then, so not only, you know, was kind of the day sabotaged, but, like, I definitely had a huge practice opportunity in just kind of looking at voices telling me how stupid I was about doing this and how,
now that's,
you know,
that's good. That's good. I'm glad you said that. Did it feel like you were able to use it as a practice opportunity, or was it pretty much an opportunity just for conditioning to beat you up?
I think I used it, you know, and I'm still using it, I think, as a practice opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah.
I mean, there was, I certainly, you know, had some moments where, you know, it was mostly conditioning beating me up.
Yeah. Well, that seems like such a good and intelligent attitude of mind, doesn't it? Really, with all of life. So what I hear you saying is you had this certain idea about the way things were going to go with your personal retreat. They aren't going that way, and you're using that as an opportunity to see how you cause yourself to suffer so you can wake up and end suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Seems perfect because, you know, life is very rarely going to actually go the way we expect it to. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Almost never, as a matter of fact. And an attitude of mind that says there's something wrong with that, or it should be different, or a mind that is rigid and inflexible because of the expectation that it has and cannot sort of roll with life where life is going, is, you know, the mind in a very often a very unhappy person. But, you know, what practice can offer us, and it sounds like this is exactly the path you're heading down, is the awareness that that's just how life is. And if we can stay flexible and open to life, then we can sort of roll with it. And the beauty in that is, no matter what happens, you know, truly, no matter what happens, it can be to our benefit because, you know, we're following what here at the monastery and through the practice we call the one rule. And the one rule says we will use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer. Everything in our experience so that we can drop that and end suffering. To me, it's the only attitude of mind that makes sense.
So I think I mainly wanted to call in because the voices were telling me not to, and also because I wanted to really get some of this support that I was, you know, kind of committing to myself to try to get during this period. So.
Yeah, seems like a great thing to do under the circumstances, doesn't it? So how does it feel to expose the voices like that? What's going on with so far?
I mean, I definitely have a voice, you know, kind of wanting me to get off the call for a number of reasons, but one, so that, like, I can replay it in my head, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet a lot of people are familiar with that. I mean, it basically, you know, as long, I mean, this is Sangha, and this is why we do so much of our work in a group setting. You know, as long as you and I are talking, it's very hard for the voices to have access to you. I mean, they can, but, you know, you've got to give some of your attention to me or to whoever you happen to be talking with in this sort of setting. And so, you know, it basically has to play a back seat and take whatever hits it has to take as you and I talk, because basically you and I are going to be talking, as we are, about the voices and what the voices are doing to you. And so it just basically has to sit there and take it while you see how it does what it does and really get for yourself how you're not the voices. They have nothing to say to you, and you don't need to be in a relationship with them. So it wants you, as quickly as possible, to get off the call, to abandon whatever sort of practice support you set up for yourself or whatever it might be, so it can have you to itself again and, you know, sort of get you alone with it and can start, you know, programming you, like it always has, to listen to it first before anything else.
And another thing that's coming up, just kind of from some positive space, is just that I am, you know, there's been a lot of voices telling me that, like, you know, I haven't been doing retreat right, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, you know, I think that, I mean, I don't call into the radio show very often, and I think that, you know, the fact that I really got myself to do that today kind of shows a little bit that I'm, you know, in a place where I'm trying to, you know, do what's best for myself.
And sure says that to me. Says it loud and clear. But, yeah. Do you remember what Amy, I don't know if you were there for the good news part of the program.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
Were you? Do you remember what she said? Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not doing a retreat right. Whatever. Yeah. Another great one is, yep, you're right. You know, it kind of leaves them no place to go.
Right.
Yeah, I'm the worst human being that ever has walked the earth. It's true. Okay, well, given that, what shall I put my attention on next?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so good, isn't it, to realize that you are not the voices.
Mm-hmm.
And you are more powerful than the voices. If you decide that you're going to expose the voices, they can't do anything to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as Sherry is fond of pointing out, and I always love this, they don't have a body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're the one with a body, and that kind of says it all right there. You're the only one that's actually here.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that the voices have any influence over us at all is that we are deeply, deeply conditioned to believe that they're real, that they are a legitimate and true source of information, and that we, in order to survive, we have to turn to them for guidance. But all that's made up. That's just conditioning. That's just how we were taught to, you know, be humans in this world. But just to get it that none of that is true. You know, you and I, all of us, you know, we are here. The voices are not here. If we turn our attention away and be here, they cease to have any relationship with us at all.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. And so you'll continue to gather whatever support you can?
Yep.
Are you doing the Reflective Listening Buddies program by chance?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you were. That's excellent. That seems like just exactly what kind of thing you need, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody where you can call up and say, hey, here's what the voices are saying to me right now, who won't think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Perfect.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jessica. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, can I expose a couple of mine?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. And what I love about it, I was just saying, is they're so vague.
Oh, they are, yeah. They can't deliver, can they?
Can't deliver. This isn't quite right. You know, this is not what I want.
Mm.
It should be different.
Kind of across the board?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just so, you know, it's really great to say it because it's like, where's the juice? Give me some real information, you know?
Yeah, give me something concrete here, you know, says who?
Says who?
Yeah, that's another great one. You know,
uh-huh.
Voices start, says who?
Uh-huh.
You know, prove it.
Prove it.
Yeah, show me concrete evidence, not skewed perspectives of judgment about who I am or who what things are, but give me some concrete evidence, yeah.
Yes. And there's never any kind of helpful direction or, you know, thing to focus on.
Yeah, Oh, I'm glad you said that, Michael, because that's, if you have any doubt about, and people always have doubts about whether or not the voices are helpful, because, you know, we think they are helpful. We're trained to think they're helpful. Just to get that they never offer anything but judgment. You know, they never offer anything but blame. There's something wrong. There's not enough. Yeah. That's just such a classic one. Things are not quite right. Is that what you said?
Not quite right, yeah.
Things are not quite right. Don't you love that?
So funny.
Yeah, based on what? But if we believe it, that can sort of put a film of unhappiness over all our experience and just take our life right away from us. Uh-huh. Just by believing that one little sentence that's happening inside our head.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. This is a fun.
Was there more?
Exposing the Voices show.
Uh-huh, Yeah, that's
no,
good.
I think that's great.
Yeah. You know, just one thing that occurs to me before, and then I guess we probably have another caller, but, you know, one thing that really helps me with this is to get it that it's all happening in words, you know, in language, in my mind.
Uh-huh.
It's not actually happening anywhere else than that. And that is so helpful because then the practice becomes very simple. Basically, just don't believe anything that's going on in my head.
Yes.
Not now, that's not the same as being easy, of course, because it's not. But it's really, really simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to question anything, any information that's coming in about me or about anything else, anything in words in my mind is suspect.
Yes. It reminds me of, you know, Sherry and you talking about that awareness comes, you know, it comes in, it just appears. It comes
mm-hmm.
in quickly, and it's kind of giving you that kind of clear perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some long, drawn-out conversation about starting with what's wrong, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just the insights drop in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things you got to prove to yourself. You know, you just have to have the experience. But just being open to life, kind of like we were talking about before, and just letting life guide you by dropping in exactly the information you need at the moment when you need it over and over and over again through every day.
Yes.
I mean, that'll make a believer out of you. I mean,
yes.
It just makes it clear that we don't need those voices at all.
Yes. Wonderful. Thanks for the support.
Yeah, that was fun.
Good. And we have another caller here.
Alrighty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Elizabeth, and oddly enough, I'm also from Mill Valley.
Is that right? Son of a gun. What's going on, Elizabeth?
Well, Dave, you came and helped me when my son died.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
So I want to say hi to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this problem, which is that I have a problem with a friend.
Okay.
And I know that it's only a problem because she says things to me that hook up perfectly with those voices in my mind.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's problematic about it. Is that what you mean?
Well, the problem then is, we got a place in Cleveland, and I've been spending a lot of time there during the last year, and it's right on the lake, and
mm-hmm.
Lake Erie, it's so beautiful there,
mm-hmm.
and I just sit and look at the lake, and it's been really healing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had to get into water to get healed, but that's not true.
That's a different religion, I think.
Yeah. And so then I got a studio there, and I've been going back to doing artwork, and it's just so great because it's been years now.
Mm.
But anyway,
yeah.
And I invited a friend of mine to come, and she said she wanted to come and work in the studio for a few days. So she came, and it was like I'd been alone for so long, and when she came, it was like a constant barrage of not good enough and, you know, something wrong.
I see. So she, it's kind of like she was, now, I think we'd have to imagine that it's not like the voices weren't there or that they had disappeared so much. What do you think about that? Or is it like that, or is it more that you just didn't have a mirror that they were reflected in, and suddenly you did when she showed up?
Yeah. Well, I think that's true, that when she showed up, then there... Well, I don't know, Dave. I mean, like, if somebody's telling you that, you know, that there's something wrong and not enough... you know the voices are right there to search around and go, well, gee, gosh, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it admittedly it is a lot harder if the same conditioning is coming out of another person's mouth as is going on in your head. Yeah, it makes it a lot more challenging.
Well, and I mean, I remember even thinking, you know, things like, well, she must be right.
Uh huh.
You know, yep. Or well, you know, if. You know, she's my friend. She knows me really well. This must be true.
Yeah, she must. You must. God, and really should listen to her.
Yeah.
She probably has some good information.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, there's trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I want to get out of trouble, and so I better, you know, really, and plus I wanted to make it so nice for her, you know, and so then her big complaint about me was that I helped her too much. So, and then I just said, well, I don't think that's a good reason to scream at someone. It got way out of hand. It got really crazy.
Okay.
And so I just want to, this was 5 weeks ago, and I kind of like, I'm back in California now, and I kind of thought, you know, I'm okay, you know, it's over, and I'm, you know, and I'm all right. And all of a sudden I got an email, and so the whole thing is back up for me. And and here's one of my questions, is if you're operating without judgments, then how do you, I remember Sherry saying to somebody, I want to end suffering in this lifetime, and so I need to arrange my life to that end. And so I thought, well, how do you do that if you are not making judgments?
Now, when you say judgments, what do you mean?
Yeah, what do I mean? All of a sudden, I'm wondering myself, you know, if I get what that means, and maybe I don't.
Yeah, so. I mean, if what you mean is self-hate, which I think is basically what you're talking about in your relationship with your friend, and that was the kind of judgment that was going on there, right? Inside you, and you project it outside you.
Oh, you, did I project my self-hate onto her? Oh, she started it, Dave.
Yeah, that's obviously tongue-in-cheek. What I was projecting, as you were talking that you were aware on some level, well, I think you actually start off saying that you were aware on some level that the impact that whatever she was doing was having on you would not be possible unless you also already believed what she was saying.
Right.
In other words,
or I was willing to listen to the voice that told me I should be talked into it.
Exactly. Yeah. Really, the same difference. You know, that is how we believe self-hate is. We're willing to listen to the voice of self-hate.
Yeah.
Over and over again, and believe that it's true.
Yeah, and of course, everybody knows that everybody knows more than I know. You know.
Right. That's how it looks from inside of it.
That's the way it looks. You know, she must know because, you know.
Right.
All right.
To go back to your question, so living without that kind of judgment, you know, of course, we don't need that, do we? Do we actually need that kind of a judgment to make it through life and be happy and fulfilled?
I don't know what you mean.
I'll just speak from my own experience that for me, as much as conditioning would want it to, would want me and everybody else, as far as I can tell, to believe otherwise, I don't need somebody beating me up all the time or judging me for what I did and didn't do right or, you know, talking to me all the time about how I'm not good enough or I'm not the right person or I should have tried harder or all the things that self-hate does. I actually don't need any of that, not even the tiniest little bit, in order to live my life in the way that I want to live my life. Freely.
So you don't need it going. I thought I had really done such good work on my own, on my voices, that I was so much more aware and that I had gotten so that I would just actually even say out loud, stop. You know, I'd be walking along, you know, like, what are you, you're not going to wear that, are you? And, you know, I finally get out the door, you know, I am wearing that and I've gone out the door and now the voice is saying, you don't deserve to go where you're going. You know, I mean, it's just always something. And I'm aware of that now, so that I'm at that stage where I can just say, oh, yeah, okay, I hear that, and I'm not going along with that.
Yeah, that's
but
great.
To have somebody screaming these things at me, I just want to get away from her.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, anybody would. So do I.
Do you?
And at the same time, you know, to me, now this is not to say that anything about that relationship, what should happen in that relationship, or anything like that, because I'm clueless. I have no idea what should happen there. But to me, there is, even as hard as that kind of thing is, which, and it is hard. I mean, it's, I know, it's very, very painful. Even things that are 100 times smaller than that, things that happen, they're very, very hard and painful. Even as hard as that is, there's something to be grateful for in it, because she showed you, or that incident showed you, places where you have not ended self-hatred.
Okay. Okay.
Am I right?
Yeah. And there is a place where you can end self-hatred, Dave. I mean,
absolutely.
It isn't just a sort of a smoother and smoother road. There really is an end to it.
Sure seems that way to me. I mean, in a way, I don't know if I can actually, if I'm in a position to completely answer that question, but from my own experience, absolutely so. It sure seems that way.
Okay.
Now, in a way you could say, it seems to me that you're experiencing that. You know, your son died. And, I mean, I'm imagining a lot of this stuff you've been doing, with getting back into to art, also mm-hmm. spending time sitting by the water, mm-hmm. being by yourself, is a way that you've found to attempt to move through that and to take care of yourself in that. Is that so?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's fabulous. Mm-hmm. And, the only
thank
thing...
You.
Yeah. And the only thing about it is that there's this thing that we talk about in practice sometimes as quietism.
Mm-hmm.
People will idealize stuff like sitting around the clock, because mm-hmm. when people sit, they can really focus and they can really just kind of exclude the voices, or isolating themselves in some kind of a way that looks like practice in order to avoid the voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to know that it's really helpful when something comes along to wake us up to whatever it is that's unfinished in there, because we don't want to set up our lives so that we're ultimately avoiding the voices. We really want it to approach life so that we can fully confront the voices and end suffering.
Yeah. That was the other half of what was coming up for me.
Perfect.
You want to end suffering, and so you want to arrange your life to that end, but you also at the same time can't just avoid things.
Yeah. Well, this is good. This is a tricky place to talk about, because when somebody like Sherry says arranging your life to that end,
mm-hmm.
basically what she means, I think, or this is what I see in that for myself, is you're arranging it so you are no longer in control of it.
Okay.
Which I think is exactly the experience you're having.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
would indicate that?
You got yelled and screamed at, and it brought a whole bunch of stuff up you've been dealing with for 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And now, the voice is telling me I need to solve the problem with her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For one thing, I should show her the error of her ways.
Right.
This would be very educational for her.
Mm-hmm. Of course it would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in other words...
I owe it to her. She's my friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to look at this, it's kind of like what Jessica was talking about a minute ago. So in this instance, just something happened that you didn't plan for, that you didn't expect and you didn't really want.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Conditioning looks at that as a really big problem.
Okay.
And it says, okay, we need to solve this problem, which, could mean, eliminating that person from your life. It could mean something like eliminating people in general from your life. Whatever mm-hmm. it takes to avoid being out of control in that way and having internal experiences that you don't have any say in.
Okay, yeah.
That's what conditioning really wants.
Yeah.
But to set up a life that is that heads towards freedom, that's not what we really want. The image people often use is of a spiritual warrior. A spiritual warrior says, give me whatever I need so that I can see what's going on, so I can wake up in suffering. Don't let me avoid anything.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. Give me what I need, not necessarily what I want.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, of course, that's really tricky because, you know, most people aren't willing for that.
Right.
Most people,
because it's not getting what you need that ends to, that can give you suffering. It's not getting what you want.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You will get what you need.
Yeah.
Whether you want it or not.
Darn.
Yeah, that incident is just such a perfect example of it. I mean, if we're open to life, and a lot of people aren't. You know, a lot of people spend time, energy, money, resources, everything they've got to stay as close as possible to life so that they can stay in control as much of life. They don't have to deal with anything that they feel like they're not adequate to, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, truly, the only thing about it is it does not lead to a happy life or to anything that looks like freedom. So what if what we want instead is everything that life is willing to give us if we're open to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even something, and I think we even talked about this a long time ago when that happened with your son, even if something as big as that.
Yeah. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Boy, okay.
But what I bet, I don't really know because we haven't talked in quite a long time, but, you know, I bet if you looked over the time between when that happened and now, and this is not to say anything about what happened and it, you know, it should have happened or anything like that, but, boy, I bet the growth and the depth of your understanding of life has dramatically increased as a result of that.
I think it has.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. And Yeah, I think it has.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a congratulations, you know, for being willing to take that attitude of mind with it. You know, to even if something is just, I mean, that's the worst nightmare for just about everyone on the planet, really.
Yeah.
And to take even that as an opportunity to see how you cause yourself to suffer and to wake up to that suffering and end suffering.
Mhm. Ah. So. Oh boy. Now I'm gonna have to go back and listen to the archive, find out what you told me,
uh-huh.
Because there's you know, there's effort to scramble it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the voices are gonna try to get really involved in that.
Yeah, because come on, you're not telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've sat here a long time on this phone.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. That's because I think you already know what to do.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
And what would that be?
Yeah. I'm not going to fall for that. Yeah.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
Well,
it's what you've been doing all along.
Speaks well for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's what I've been doing all along. Oh, you are so kind. Oh, you know, I remember, that reminds me, that when I remember listening to, I don't know, it was on a CD or what, but I remember Sherry saying, somebody said, or maybe she said, you know, if you really do this work, you're going to have to find new friends. Just like if you quit drinking, you're going to have to find new friends.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it right there.
Yep, could be some good information there.
Yeah, there might be. Could be.
Yeah. Well, you'll know as you pay attention.
Yeah, okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Bye.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, that was a very powerful conversation for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's powerful things happening there, I have a feeling.
Yes, yes, indeed. Dave, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and Stop, Drop, and Breathe, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Julianne from Maryland.
Hey, Julianne.
Hi, how are you, Dave?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. It's great to have the opportunity to talk with you.
Likewise.
Well, the first three callers were, I mean, it was as if Catherine was reading my mind and saying everything that I had to say, and same with Jessica, and the last caller was, oh, I mean, it's just amazing. They seemed custom made
for my benefit. It tends to go but, that way, doesn't it? It's quite magical.
It is, yeah. So I, too, was calling, you know, because I committed to calling in on a regular basis. And I guess I'll start with an update, which is that I recently just finished my first commissioned portrait painting.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks, yeah. So it's a big, great big 36 by 24 oil, and I love it. You know, I guess I'm a little nervous. I still haven't presented it to the person that I'm doing it for, but I'm still proud of it.
Well, I think it's not just a success on the tangible level in the painting, but I think a very big process success for you also, isn't it?
Yes, I know, and I'm completely downplaying that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's huge, and it's been made into, you know, there are tons of voices telling me that, you know, doubting my work and trying to get me to quit and trying to downplay the triumph of getting back into it and doing all that I have. So
yeah, because they've been fighting it the entire time, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
So just to keep it in mind that the portrait's fabulous, tremendous job, but you did something even bigger than that with this.
Yeah. That's true. I know, you're right, because ego is completely trying to run the show with this.
Mm-hmm.
And make me, I know, I thought of this earlier on the call. I was like, I think, you know, ego everything that I'm doing in my life, ego is trying to be, obviously, it sounds so obvious right now, but in control of. It's making the art be about it. It has to be about being, you know, meeting a certain standard and being really, really successful at it. And
Yeah, well, you're involved in some really dangerous activities here, right? Like letting go of the voices and actually just allowing the art to happen, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Which happens instantly. Well, no, actually, no. During the art process itself, even, they're going the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even sometimes, hard to stick with it. But yet, but I'm always glad that I did.
Yeah, that there is within you something that's stronger and more powerful than the voices. And that's what you're really, really getting for yourself.
Yeah. And like there was something when I was listening earlier that I was like, you know, just completely relating to the you're not good enough and all of that that people, other callers are expressing their hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was somebody who said, no, but you think you're really special too.
Uh-huh. And you said, the voice.
I
know,
like,
who you are.
Maybe I am special. Yeah. I know. Well, it was confusing because there was something wrong with being special.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because you're right. You are special. But you're not special in that way it wants you to be special, which is
right.
You're special because there's something wrong with you, basically.
Well, no, it was like more of a. It was like an accusatory, or maybe you are interpreting it right, but it was an accusatory voice saying, okay, yeah, you think you're not good enough, but you know you also think you're really special too.
Yeah, and that's bad, and you should be ashamed of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was kind of wondering at the time, well, is that my mentor? Like, does my mentor think I'm special? I don't know.
Well, it often will take something that really seems similar to that, especially when somebody's doing practice, because you're really keeping an eye on it. You got a really good sense of who these voices are and what mm-hmm. self-hate is all about. So, you know, we can't pull out the old clunky, you know, this will do it every time kind of stuff like it used to. You know, it's got to use stuff that's pretty subtle so that you'll believe it. And that's a really subtle one, because the mentor probably would say you're special. You're not special in a way that excludes anybody else. You're not more special than anybody. You're not less than anybody.
Yeah.
You're just special because you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's because
mm-hmm.
you exist, because you are who you are. But you know, so self-hate is kind of, I would project, kind of riding on that.
Right. You are so right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And giving you something that sounds like it, but is actually the exact opposite of it.
You are so right. Yeah. And you know what also keyed into me, which I think relates to that, is that when you were saying that a good answer to the voices is, oh, really? You think so? Or you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, I'm not good enough. And there was a part of me that said, oh, no, I could never say that because it would make me feel like I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was another part of me that said, it's okay to not be good enough. Like, it's not, and it wasn't like from the, it was like, I want to be okay with being whatever I am. You know, it doesn't matter if it's not good enough. Like, I want to be okay with being not good enough, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And then, of course, the next step after that is there's no such thing as not being good enough.
Yes.
No such thing. It does not exist. That's why that little trick works. In order to say yes to a piece of self-hatred like that,
mm-hmm.
you have to not believe that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you could mm-hmm. just say, oh, yeah, you're right, if you believed
mm-hmm.
it is true, because you would fight it instead, or you would go along with it. But that's a really different thing. You know, because basically from that place you recognize that, you know what, this is just baloney.
Yes,
this is just a bunch of garbage that conditioning is throwing in to make me feel bad. That's the only thing that's happening.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's
kind of like my mom came to visit this weekend with my dad, and I was, you know, which is an awesome thing, and yet I was preparing for the very worst because she can be really critical and just downright mean.
Uh-huh.
And so it was the first time she was going to be seeing my paintings live. She'd seen like little emails.
Mm-hmm.
But and so, you know, she was actually really impressed, except for, well, when she saw them on the emails, she'd immediately launch into criticisms without even, she'll be like, oh, yeah, that's great. But, you know, and then she'd tell me five things that she felt were, she
mm-hmm.
calls it criticism, helpful criticism, like from
mm-hmm.
an art,
ouch.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But the way she is, she puts people down. You know, it's not like it's just criticism. But
mm-hmm.
But anyway, so she was there, and she actually had great things to say. But then there were like two pieces where she was like, but you know what this needs? And I have to admit, if she hadn't been probably praising the others, you know, with such a gusto, I don't know that I would have been able to be like, oh, that's okay, you know, that she's saying these
mm-hmm.
other negative, I don't know.
So we're going to have to go in just a second, but you know,
okay.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was coming up for me when you were talking about, you know, this portrait that you've just
mm-hmm.
finished. And that you have not yet shown it to the people who commissioned the portrait,
mm-hmm.
that you know, just like sounds like you're practicing with your mother, you know, you're going to want to be really, really taking good care of yourself, right, when you take it over there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, conditioning, if they do anything, you know, they flinch their eyebrow the wrong way, then conditioning is going to be all over it to try to make you feel bad.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So it's good, yeah. I wish we had more time, because I've had all kinds of fun ideas about things you could do. Like, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done, you probably have, I can't remember what you talked to Sherry about, but, you know, while you're painting, writing down what the voices are saying.
Okay.
That's a really good one. And because you're a painter, it opens up all kinds of fun things. Like, have you ever thought about painting the voices? That would be really fun. Just kind of a picture of what the voices are, or painting you, you know, how you really are, and then maybe how the voices say you are, you know, all kinds of fun stuff like that to, in a way that's tangible for you, which painting obviously is, kind of make it clear what's really so and what's, you know, just a bunch of stuff that conditioning is making up that's not true.
Okay. Okay. All right. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it'd be
fun. Okay. All right. Well, I'll give it a try and I'll check back in and let you know.
Okay. That's always enjoyable.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank
Take care.
Too,
Have a great
Michael.
Evening.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Julianne. Dave, I'm so grateful you were able to join us tonight.
And me also. It's always a great pleasure.
Yeah, very fun. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.